Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, February 12th, 2021. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news and analysis on books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me again today. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So traditionally, Andrew, the American Bookseller Association's Winter Institute is the publishing industry's first big show of the year. As has become the new normal in the coronavirus pandemic, though, the 2021 program will be virtual. PW has a preview issue dedicated to the Winter Institute, and it looks like a strong program indeed.
Yeah, Winter Institute, it's a great show. It's become a major fixture on the publishing calendar, sort of the big first show of the year, as you noted. Well, it comes after ALA Midwinter, but let's say the Winter Institute is kind of the start of the new year for booksellers. The focus for the show is always on big issues in the industry and on big books, of course, and it certainly does look like we're going to have a strong Winter Institute program. It's set to go online February 18th to 20th, and as you say, we have a preview issue out now for Publishers Weekly. And the program is a strong one. You know, it sort of examines some of the trends of 2020, you know, surviving the pandemic, the rising awareness of the need for more diversity and inclusion, managing the growth in online sales too, which is, you know, been really a key issue for independent booksellers, and also maintaining the sort of strong direct relationships, you know, with in-person customers that is, of course, the lifeblood for independent bookselling. And of course, publishers will be there promoting their latest books over the 3 days of programming. Publisher and business partner virtual booths will be open for booksellers to drop in and talk with reps about books. And a huge get, former President Barack Obama, whose memoir, Promised Land, has helped seal what's been a very strong holiday sales season for booksellers, is going to open Winter Institute this year with a personal video message for booksellers. Allison Hill, CEO of ABA, says she expects more than 1,000 people to sign up for this year's Winter Institute, and the registration fee will be $35. I think that's a price point that makes participation possible for many booksellers, even in what's been a pretty tough year for indies.
So as you say, Andrew, even if just for a quick opening message, Barack Obama is a huge get indeed. The former president, of course, is a well-known reader, in addition to being a prolific best-selling author.
Yeah, I always enjoyed it when President Obama would sort of slip out to a bookshop when he was in office, right? And you'd see, you know, pictures of him in a bookstore. And of course, the former president shared reading lists often with people, and his reading lists were really good. You know, you can just Google President Obama in reading lists, and some people have like compiled them all over the years that he's done. And there's some terrific stuff on there. But, you know, let's just, can we agree that it's really just nice to have a reader and a book lover in the White House again? And I think it's better for the nation, too, not just for the publishing industry, that we have a reader in office. You know, we did not have that in President Trump. We may have that in Joe Biden. We definitely do have that in Dr. Jill Biden, who, of course, spoke to librarians in one of her first appearances. In fact, I think it was her first appearance as First Lady. That was last month at the ALA Midwinter meeting. But suffice it to say, it's good for the nation. It's good for the book business to have someone in office who's comfortable with a good thick book and who recognizes the importance of books and literacy.
So tell us about some of the other highlights of this year's Winter Institute.
Well, it really is a strong program. The conference kicks off with a conversation between author Brené Brown and bookseller Janet Geddes, who's the owner of Avid Bookshop in Athens, Georgia. The session is titled, What Now? Which I think is a really good title, sort of addresses what we're going through. And the panel is going to address how booksellers can stay committed to their work even in these difficult times. A second keynote is called Novelist as Citizen, and it looks at both the future and the recent past, and it has a star-studded panel, award winners all, Lauren Groff, Viet Thanh Nguyen, and Colson Whitehead. The discussion is going to be moderated by Michelle Malans, who's a buyer at Changing Hands Bookstore in Tempe, Arizona. And this panel is going to focus more on the role of novelists and books in the fight for social justice. And the final keynote is a conversation between ABA CEO Allison Hill and Brian David Johnson. And Johnson is the author of The Future You, Break Through the Fear and Build the Life You Want. And Johnson was Intel's first ever futurist, and he's currently a professor at Arizona State University's Global Futures Laboratory and the School for the Future of Innovation and Society. And I love me a good futurist. He is certainly one. And, you know, Johnson sees the pandemic through a sort of a different lens. as an opportunity. You know, how we get to that opportunity, of course, is still rough, and it's a tough road ahead. It's not yet clear. But Johnson says that there is a boom in our future once we do get to the other side. He believes that there's a lot of pent-up consumer desire and a lot of desire for community out there. And that's something booksellers do well, which is build community. And I think he's right. You know, it's one of the reasons why we at Publishers Weekly are going to be hosting the U.S. Book Show in May, you know, taking over in place of Book Expo, which has been discontinued. And we believe that for that very reason, that people do want community, they do want to be able to come together, that, you know, we see a future where that book show is only going to grow. And look, all you need to do is take a walk through New York City and see how many people are eating outside in January and February in freezing temperatures and makeshift huts in the middle of the street to know that we are a resilient lot. You know, the challenge, of course, as Johnson notes, is going to be getting to the other side of this pandemic and, you know, how much devastation that is going to entail, especially to the most vulnerable among us. And I'd like to suggest here that while we can take a moment to look forward to realizing that boom that Johnson said is out there, that we believe is out there, I think right now is also the time to make sure that we focus on making sure everyone can enjoy that boom, that everyone comes back and can take part in that boom that's looming in our future. I digress a little bit, but do check out the Winter Institute preview. And of course, Publishers Weekly will be covering Winter Institute every day, all day that they go on. So look for our reports on the PW website next week as well.
You mentioned the U.S. Book Show, Andrew. This week, registration open for publishing's newest conference.
Yes, that's right. The U.S. Book Show, which of course is, you know, the new online, at least for this year, online book and publishing show produced by Publishers Weekly, did open registration this week. So I ask you all to please do mark your calendars. The show is going to run May 25th to May 27th of this year. Among the programming, the fair is going to focus on showcasing the big books that are coming in the fall. Well, not just big books, as many books as we can fit coming in the fall, highlighting new releases of interest to booksellers, librarians. Librarians are definitely going to be a big part of the show, and of course, consumers. And like the ABA show, U.S. Book Show is going to be affordable. We also have set an entry fee of $35. There's more information on registration at the U.S. Book Show website. You can just Google that, U.S. Book Show. It'll pop right up.
And anything you can say about the program that's in the works?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more to come very soon. Look for that in the near future on the Publishers Weekly website. But for now, I can just echo what my boss, PW Editorial Director Jim Milia, has said, and that's that we're focusing the show to pay special attention to, you know, the big books coming in the fall, including books and authors who are confronting the pandemic, diversity, and, you know, other contemporary issues. In addition, the winners of PW's annual Bookseller of the Year and Sales Rep of the Year awards are going to be awarded during the event. Also, the U.S. Selfies Awards for independent authors are going to be announced during the show. The show will also include a component aimed at charitable fundraising. That's going to be designed to benefit booksellers and libraries and nonprofit organizations that are in need of aid in these trying times. So, you know, stay tuned. We're going to have more on all the program stuff coming soon. Plus, there's going to be opportunities for virtual parties and socializing and networking, all the stuff that we've really been missing out on in the last year, and also a pretty robust professional program as well. And the way this year is setting up, there's going to be a lot to discuss on the professional side.
And late last week in PW, Andrew, you reported on an interesting development in that new class action antitrust suit accusing Amazon and the Big Five publishers of colluding to fix ebook prices. Initially, the suit named only Amazon as a defendant, but in an amended complaint filed last week, the Big Five publishers are now also named as defendants.
Yeah, not an entirely unexpected move, but our listeners will note that in the initial complaint, the publishers were called co-conspirators in a scheme to restrain competition in the ebook market, but they weren't actually named as defendants. Well, they are now. Why that's happening now, I really can't answer. You know, I've asked attorneys for the plaintiffs. We had some speculation in an initial report that we did a week ago, but we're not really sure why now they're defendants, whereas they weren't initially. The attorneys for the plaintiffs say only that they believe that the publishers are part of a major ebook price fixing scam. So I may have more to report on that soon. And if so, we'll certainly update you. But my guess is we're going to learn more about why the publishers are now defendants in a court filing, probably fairly soon.
And what's the impact of the move?
Well, what it means immediately is that the publishers are going to be on the hook and hiring lawyers to defend them and what could very well be a high stakes case. You know, if the Apple case is any guide, you'll remember that that case led to about $600 million in compensation to consumers between Apple and the five publishers combined. And of course, it led to a host of onerous sanctions as well. So that really is the most immediate impact, right? Is that it's going to draw publishers fully into this suit, put them on the hook for potential damages. And of course, the publishers will no doubt seek to have the case dismissed. So that's surely coming next, and we'll see how that goes. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of industry observers are still questioning the basis for this case because it just seems so counterintuitive that Amazon and the publishers would now collude in this fashion just years after the publishers were found to have colluded with Apple in what was an explicit effort to blunt Amazon's market power and to invite more competition into the ebook market. And for people who are, you know, questioning the basis for this case, all I can say right now is, yeah, I hear you. You know, I don't know what the evidence is going to end up showing here because there isn't a lot of it. And I don't know how that evidence is going to square with the law. You know, our listeners will recall that the case so far boils down to an allegation that, you know, the price fixing here happens through the use of a most favored nations clause in all the publishers' contracts with Amazon. And that effectively ensures that Amazon can't be undersold in the ebook market. Now, how that exactly translates into a price fixing scheme, just don't know. We can only guess at this point. Antitrust experts tell me that there are ways in which that could very well translate into a price fixing scheme. And I'll just take them at their word at this point, early as it is, because we just haven't seen any real evidence of that. But I will take this chance to point this out. The publishers basically told us that this was all going to happen back in the Apple case, right? Individually, the publishers were crystal clear back in 2010 when they made the agency switch that they did not have the ability to deal with a giant like Amazon on their own. And the refrain in the Apple case a decade ago was, well, hey, this is not about Amazon. This is about the publisher's actions with Apple right now. You know, if Amazon's a problem, the response was, well, then you should be suing Amazon or making a case against Amazon, colluding. Well, that's not the way to go about this. And I'll be honest, that's a reasonable point. But what this case now shows is that nearly a decade later, and in the wake of a pandemic that has driven Amazon's revenues and its market power to a whole new level, we still have not addressed our Amazon issue, right? We still have not addressed the Amazon problem, and not in terms of regulation or in terms of legislation or in terms of business and negotiations, you know, between the publishers and Amazon or any other supplier in Amazon. So I'll say this for now, until we see more evidence. This case kind of feels to me like a necessary step in a reckoning with Amazon that's been a long time coming. You know, the Apple case was not about Amazon, even if Amazon was a driving force behind that case. This case now is about Amazon. And whatever happens next, that strikes me as an opportunity to finally deal with Amazon's market power. So the publishers may be defendants now, and that may be, you know, a potentially dangerous place for them to be. But it also seems to me that few defendants have a chance to work a case to their advantage the way the publishers do here. And it's going to be interesting to see if that happens.
Well, indeed it will. And Andrew Albanese, we look forward to discussing it with you as developments unfold. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks so much for joining me on Velocity of Content.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, a thorough understanding of global publishing in 2020 considers not only the bottom lines for companies, but also what underlines their businesses. Questions about publishing formats, books, mangas, and graphic novels, even magazines, must be raised. Cross-pollination in media entangles the story further, as book titles can extend IP across film and television, even into gaming. Raising these points and offering thoughtful analysis is what distinguishes the latest edition of Global 50, the world ranking of the publishing industry, from Rüdiger Wischenbart.
Because it's such a fragmented and changing and fluid business, we are riding waves and we never have an understanding or the foundations, the numbers, the parameters for the full, complete picture. But that's also part of the fun. And obviously, like as any researcher knows, when you talk to a handful of knowledgeable people, experienced people, and when you look at the trends over a certain period of time, over several years, you identify it easily and quickly both what is leading from A to B and where are just contradictions that you cannot explain. When it comes to the Global 50 ranking, the main challenge at the beginning was that so many of the non-English language companies, so all the Europeans, with a few exceptions, are privately owned. Big families own the largest publishing company or media company in the Spanish language world, and they don't need to report their numbers. But over time, you can talk to them, and they will reveal the main figures to you, and that's how we work.
Ranking and rebooting publishing, next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.